we now, it's episode 17, and we're doing something that we haven't done since episode 1.
Yeah.
And Brian and I are here together on the Acme stage in Minneapolis. It's for those of you who haven't figured out, we've been doing it from two locations the entire run. But when we did, our initial episode was done here in Minneapolis on stage, and since I was in town, and Brian lives here, we figured we'd do it again.
Yeah, plus we got a handsome sound guy when we're here. There's no handsome sound guy at home. It's just dumb old me trying to figure out the microphone. Ooh, I'm going to start wearing an Eric mask. I'm going to start wearing an Eric mask when I do the podcast. Just so, oh, look, I'll be better at the sound. That won't creep you out at all, will it, Eric?
I think just calling him a handsome guy probably creeped him out enough.
He gets that all the time.
Yeah, not from you, though.
You'd be surprised.
Okay. So anyway.
You picked an inopportune time to come here in a way.
Well, I kind of knew, okay, because I'm a weather geek.
Sure.
And I know that the meteorological bottom of winter is January 21st.
Oh, that's the
yeah, if you look at the average temperature, if you look at the sinusoidal curve that occurs between July and January, time where it starts curving up is about January 21st, and where it starts curving down is July 21st.
Ah.
So those dates in my calendar are always in my memory calendar. So I knew I was booking probably the coldest metropolis. I don't know if there is a metropolis north of here. Is there? Maybe an Oslo.
Boy, that's
maybe
a good
Oslo.
Duluth.
It's not real. You're going to call that a metropolis?
Well, yeah.
It's Green Bay without a football team.
Yeah, this might be the coldest like real city.
Yeah,
the United States.
Fairbanks, is that a real
Buffalo,
city?
Maybe? Is it really cold in Buffalo? They just get a lot of
snow. No, it's not cold. It's just surrounded by, it's just downwind of the falls.
Yeah.
So it snows, you know, all that moisture that gets put in the air, it just snows from all year.
Yeah.
So it's not really cold. You know, because when it snows, it warms up.
Right. Which is not happening now.
Well, actually, that's interesting that you should say that. It's 20 degrees out today coming over to from the hotel.
Balmy.
I could not believe that I was delighted with 20 degrees. Oh my gosh, I don't need these stupid gloves. Look, my hood is down.
Well, the day you got in.
Yeah, the day I got in, it was
Tuesday, right?
Was that 8 below? It was my memory.
I believe that's how it started off, yeah.
Yeah, I got off the plane at 8 below, and I'm staying at a hotel that is not the hotel where I normally stay. And I like to think that I'm spontaneous, and in my youth as a comic, you know, just tell me I got a gig, you know, and I grab the Rand McNally Atlas, and I know how to drive there,
sure.
And I'm pretty much, you know, the car breaks down, I got AAA, I can get it towed, I got a frequent rental from a car rental, they'll bring me a car, and then, you know, I'm back on the road to the gig. I've always thought myself spontaneous. I've been working Minneapolis so long that I have gotten into a rut here. And you change the hotel, and I am completely lost.
It's been the same hotel for 20 years, 15 years, right?
Better part of 15 years.
Yeah.
I've actually probably lived close to 6 months.
Wow,
If you add up all the times... All the times I've come to Acme over the past 15 years and stayed at that hell, I've lived there for 6 months straight.
That's crazy.
And they didn't have, because the Vikings playoffs, they thought the Vikings playoffs were going to book out the hotel. So,
oh.
Which is interesting because in most of the country, the hardest things to kick are cigarettes and heroin. Mm-hmm. In Minneapolis, it's a 27-yard field goal.
Oh! Oh, it hurts. I see why you said you were rooting against the Vikings. And it makes perfect sense now that you're, you know, you got to. I was off this weekend anyways. I'm like, hey, I hope they win.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always root against the team of the city I'm playing in the next week. any playoffs.
Oh my gosh, yeah. All through the reign of Michael Jordan in Chicago, I would root against the Bulls.
Yeah, you just ruin an extra weekends in Chicago comedy-wise.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's there are people that will tell you that the comedy Comedy busted all around the country in the 90s because there was more supply than demand.
Sure.
But in Chicago, anybody that was in the business at that time will tell you that they were bankrupted by Michael Jordan.
Because people probably lost 3 weeks of comedy every year, 5 years in a row, basically.
You could not compete with the Bulls games.
It was such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Well, then, if only Michael Jordan would have gambled on comedy clubs, everybody could have won.
So I had no idea how to get to the hotel, and so I Googled it, and you know, I've always said, well, Google's really cool. It's got this little feature that shows you how to take public transit, and according to Google, the hotel is very close to a train stop, which is you know, convenient.
Yeah, lucky you, huh?
I can just get on the airport, get on the train, and then you know, stop a couple blocks from the hotel. Which theoretically is true, but they didn't know which stop.
How would Google mess that? It's so weird.
I don't know. When Google messes up, they mess up. You know, most of the time they're dead on.
Yeah.
And they seem to know how long it's going to take, even with pit stops.
They're like the Vikings kicker. Usually so dependable, but every now and then just wide left.
Yeah, and he saved the shows. He saved Acme.
You should send him free tickets. He could use a laugh, Blair Walsh.
That's what I told the owner here. I said, you got to send him a thank you note. Because that one kick saved you about $8,000.
Yeah.
So I get on the train, and they Google gets me off at a stop, and I missed the stop too the first time. I missed the stop because I did not realize, because I've always been here when the weather's nice, and when you get to the stop, the doors open.
But not in the winter, they only open if you want them to open, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Preserves a little heat.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So you're
waiting for the doors to click
open.
I'm
waiting for the doors to open.
We're just racing.
And I said,
well,
I think this is the stop. How come the doors aren't opening? And it's like, no one gets off at that stop.
Yeah, it's also terrifying. Yeah, it's my old neighborhood. I know that stop. Not a great stop.
No, it's a horrible stop. And so no one even wanted to open the door. Even if even if somebody had passed gas in the car, they would not have opened the door at that stop. They would have breathed it rather than open the door, because whatever is nasty on the inside of the train is nowhere near as nasty as what could be on the other side of that stop. So I missed the stop. And I should have taken that as an omen from God. I should have just said, oh, God does not want me to get off next to the building with all the different colored plywood on it.
Not like a Martha Stewart trend or anything. This is kind of a necessity thing.
So I ride to the next stop and then say, well, I missed my stop. And so I crossed over and then got on the train going the other way. To get to the stop, and I get off at that stop, and once I'm there alone on the platform, I realize that Google was wrong. That there was absolutely no way.
And we're at minus five by then, probably.
Only an algorithm would have sent me to that stop.
Yeah. Maybe Google was just messing with you.
Even the most decent human on earth that was a practical joker would not have told me to get off at that stop. So it seemed like a very long time before the next train came.
It could kill you weather out. What's interesting about doing comedy in Minneapolis is that the deadly weather is your friend and your foe, because you have to go out in it to get to the shows, but it's this horrible cold weather that makes the comedy scene and the theater scene so great, is that everybody wants to, you know, have inside heated entertainment.
And you don't know. That's the thing. You don't know exactly what the parameters are that the crowd is either going to say, let's just stay home and light a fire,
right,
or man, let's see how far we can drive in this stuff.
Right. And people are pretty hardy, but I feel like the cold here, it's like one of those movies where the cops chained to the criminal and they have to use each other's expertise to get out of the thing. It's like you're chained to this deadly person that you wish you could get away from, but they're essential to your survival in a weird sense.
And speaking of things we want to get away from.
Segment one. Oh, it's always
you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in their gloom. I've been so lonely, baby. I've been so lonely.
Segment two of the rule of three. I'm Brian Miller, and I'm here with Tim Slagle. And here for some hot Chapo talk. I realized, by the way, El Chapo recently recaptured. You know you're important when you're not just a Chapo. You're the Chapo. He's not just any old Chapo. There's one Chapo. This is the Chapo. And a fascinating character. God, there's got to be a million movies coming out about this guy, right? Johnny Depp and Javier Bardem and 90 other guys are lining up to try to play.
Yeah, well, first of all, just the name, El Chapo. Any idea what that means in Spanish? I don't know.
No, we should. Here, I'll have my intern look it up. It's because it was in English, it sounds like Chapo, like you're going to chop somebody up. So it's kind of got that.
Yeah.
It's got the great connotation.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, of course, you know, speaking as being fluent in Spanglish as I am, I would think it means the chap.
Ah, well, yeah, that would be Chapo. Would be the
yeah, that is Spanglish.
That's
for chap.
That's like British English to American English to Spanish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like donde está the bathroom-o.
El Chapo, it was such a fascinating character. I mean, even like when he was briefly in, he was in jail a couple years ago was when they caught him, right?
Yeah.
And when he was in there, I remember reading about he was in jail in the sense that, like, we're more in jail right now than El Chapo was when he was in jail. Like, as far as no one's bringing me, you know.
Well, it's kind of like the cooking sequence from the Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Is how you kind of pictured El Chapo in jail.
Don't Paulie would slice the garlic so thin it melted in the pan.
Yeah, with nicer kitchen appliances, though. It was probably brand new Gen Air equipment installed in his cell.
And then they say he broke out. I mean, from everything I read, he was like, yeah, I think I'm going to go now. And he said, hey, guard, we should go. And the guy's like, yeah, well, we'll go. You know, it wasn't, I mean, he just paid some guard. They just walked him out the front door. It's not like he didn't tunnel through anything. You know, nobody lowered the helicopter with the rope ladder into the yard so he could hang on to the thing.
Well, they said he tunneled.
Well, he tunneled?
They said he tunneled.
I don't think he tunneled.
There was a tunnel.
There was a tunnel. He didn't touch a spoon.
No, not at all. Not at all. He commissioned a tunnel to be constructed. And then obviously what happened was they said, okay, Mr. Chapo, we've got the tunnel ready for you to leave. And he looked at the tunnel and said, I'm not going through that shit.
Yeah, right.
and said, nah, I'm just going to go out the front door. They go, but you have to take the tunnel. We got to. Nah, I'm just going out the front door.
Like the Shawshank contract. All right, I need a bunch of guys and a bunch of spoons.
And so when they came to the guards, they said, all right, how did he get out? He's got a tunnel.
Yeah, those guys, I think those guys dug the tunnel about 20 minutes after El Chapo left. They were like, oh, we probably better make it look like he did something.
An interesting story. That's Dillinger. That's how he got out of the Crown Point jail.
He tunneled?
Well, no. He walked front door.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then the guards, after he was gone, said, "Oh crap, we gotta account for this." So then they carved a gun out of a bar of soap, and then colored it with shoe polish, and then said he used this.
But there's not a lot of soap carving shenanigans in jail anymore. I've used to carve a lot of things out of soap to do, you know.
Well, they probably use body wash now.
Well, there you go.
It, you know, and it makes sense because not only does it clean, it's also an effective lube.
Oh God! We made a fake gun out of hardened body wash. Took a long time. And of course, I love that. You know, truth is fiction, stranger, all that. I mean, Chapo, the Chapo gets caught because he wants to make a movie.
Well, actually, that getting back to what I was saying, with the name, Bill, did you look that up yet?
Bill, the intern, is moving really slow. I think he doesn't like working in this basement.
No, it's hard to get the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
What do we pay you? Oh, you're an unpaid intern. Mm. Okay. If you didn't know any better, and somebody told you that that he was meeting with El Chapo, you would think, oh, is that the famous Mexican comedian?
Oh, it does sound like that's true.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
El Chapo. It's starring El Chapo.
El Chapo. Yeah.
Este Sábado and Sábado Domingo Grande.
He's like the Jeff Dunham.
El Chapo.
Yeah, the Jeff Dunham of Mexico. He says really, really racist caricature American puppets that he does.
Who is that one guy? There was one. It was a very famous Spanish comedian, and they put him in Around the World in 80 days. Yeah.
Oh.
And people just went, who is that guy? Why is he in our movie? And it turned out that the Around the World in 80 days, because they were it was around the world.
Oh, right. So
they
wanted
felt
to hit
that
all the
film could have global reach. So they brought in one of the stars.
Hmm.
They got like the biggest star in Spain at the time was Cantinflas, I think was his name.
Hmm.
Cantinflas. And yeah, no idea.
I'm pretty good with my comedy history too, but I don't know.
But I guess he was like the Jerry Lewis of Spain.
Ooh. Oy.
So anyway, my big joke this week was that nobody won the $1.3 billion jackpot in Powerball. However, there is a windfall expected for the men assigned to guarding El Chapo.
Yeah. So now Sean Penn meets with Chapo because he's going to do the biopic. He says he's serving as a journalist for Rolling Stone.
Well, Sean Penn. Okay. Sean Penn.
Yeah.
I call it the Ginger Grant syndrome. Have we talked about this before?
No.
I know I've brought it up. On Gilligan's Island, of course, the go-to guy was always the professor.
Right.
And then if you wanted to do anything, ask the professor.
Yeah.
However, there were certain things that the professor's knowledge base was limited on.
Right.
Or he would be busy, like, finding a way to make latex so that he could make the spring on the dial on a phone.
Sure.
So when the professor's expertise was not useful, they would go to Ginger Grant because, fortunately, Ginger Grant would have played a doctor surgeon in a film where she had to remove an appendix.
Oh, sure.
So that
I think we did talk about this now.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
So I think that Sean Penn has Ginger Grant disease.
Yeah, I believe that.
Is that he was in The Falcon and the Snowman.
Sure.
So he envisions that he kind of knows a lot about the drug dealing culture.
Yeah, no, I would definitely believe that. I mean, somebody pointed out, this was not my insight, but somebody said, hey, Sean Penn, maybe your first question would have been to, hey, El Chapo, how many real journalists have you had murdered? Because I think it's quite a few. Yeah, he seems like the ultimate blowhard. He's impossible to like. I'm not talking about El Chapo. I like El Chapo. I'm talking about Sean Penn, by the way.
Well, I thought I saw after the Sean Penn interview was divulged, I thought I saw something where Sean Penn actually said that he wasn't really doing a journalism, is that he was helping the, you know, it was like his defense. He was helping the federal authorities find him. And I'm sure someone said, Sean, you really want to stick to that?
Yeah. And that also seems like the least Sean Penn thing to do, right? Like, he's going to help the government catch a criminal. It's
right.
The opposite of anything.
Right. Right. But I thought I saw a blip on the news where they said that he actually did assist the federal authorities, which, you know, you have to deny. It's like,
yeah.
No. I just wanted to try some blow that hadn't been stepped on once. I've heard that it's amazing, and I had no idea where else to get it.
Ever since I broke up with Madonna, I can't get the really good stuff. Yeah, do you think, I guess Chapo, he wants Sean Penn to play him in the biopic. That's got to be his fantasy, right?
Sean Penn?
Yeah.
Too
old, you think?
I don't know. Who would play Brian Miller if you could pick anyone to play Brian Miller?
I mean, if you have to stay within the realm of I could say Gosling,
no.
But you have to pick somebody who kind of looks a little like you. But
No. I'm not even close there. Not even
okay. Because I was going to say
that's not what I'm asking.
Okay. I mean,
You see, for Slagle, I would want George Clooney to play the Slagle story.
Sure. I would go with Ben Whishaw, the guy who plays Q in the new Bond movies. He kind of looks like a better-looking version of me.
Okay.
I mean, he's definitely better-looking than me, but, you know.
But Sean Penn doesn't look a thing like El Chapo.
No, but I think El Chapo would probably like... I bet El Chapo thinks he looks like Sean Penn.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what I'm
yeah,
saying.
Yeah.
I don't look a thing like George Clooney.
Fair enough.
But and you're still stuck with the... Well, he still has to kind of look like me.
I guess that's true.
You just can't go all...
I'm going to go with sound guy Eric. I'm going to go with Eric. I want Eric to play me in the movie.
And before we get cut off, that's the end of segment two. Back with the final segment of The Rule of Three. I'm Tim Slagle. Brian Miller on the other side.
Yes.
And we are... this week has been touched by a little bit of sadness.
Yeah.
For anybody who has been in a cave for the past week, David Bowie passed away. Did I say
kind
Bowie?
Of surprisingly in
on
terms
Monday.
Of... Yeah. I guess kind of his illness was kept pretty well under wraps.
It was, yeah. It was amazing. It was because Friday of last week, everyone was raving about the new Bowie album.
It was like it's interesting. I wonder if he didn't want it to get out because he was like if we'd have known he was dying and he releases this album, it's going to kind of color everyone's reaction to it. You know, it's you're never going to really get to see what people really just reacted to it. People seem to naturally just go, "Wow, this is really good."
Yeah,
with no, you know.
Yeah.
Saintly patina of death, you know.
Yeah, you know, and that's actually an interesting thing, is because my wife's a nurse, and she says all the time people look, people will just make it to milestones.
Yeah.
She said like in the ICU, people would always die the day after Christmas, or
yep.
they'd always, when they had a birthday or anniversary, is they could keep going just until that moment. To bring this down really sad is my mom, died very close to the first of the month, and what we realized was that she was trying to hold on for because she knew if she made it past that first of the month that she would get another Social Security check.
I want one more out of him. I thought you were going to say your mom killed David Bowie, so I was going to
No, but it was, and she missed it by, honestly, because I handled her estate, she missed it like by 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
And I, looking back, I know that that's what she was hanging
that's,
on for.
I respect that. I like that. I want one more. I love that.
It was actually so much on the cusp that she, that I had, as her executor, I had to send it back because it came. It was
oh,
cut.
Sure. Right.
It came. It was cut. The wires were crossed. But,
yeah.
But they demanded it back once everything had been established. So.
Yeah, I come from a family of undertakers, so we definitely that.
Oh,
we
so
see it from
know.
The opposite.
So,
we see it from the opposite side, which is
oh wow. So you can actually schedule how many employees you need.
Yeah, I'm talking about employee scheduling. Yeah, there's definitely patterns to that, or like flu season stuff like that. You know,
huh.
there were you know my uncles could definitely tell you they would notice patterns and trends across that. So
yeah, you know, I guess your family's been in it for generations. It's like, yeah. Oh, holiday season. That's no, I cannot give you the week between Christmas and New Year's off.
Yeah, it's gonna be
that's
busy.
Our busy season.
It is because it's cold. And
it's cold. It's
sick and falling. People, old people get out. And they because there's a lot of really frail people who don't leave their houses, and then they go to family gatherings and stuff, be it on Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, right around there. They're getting out and they're coming back in, and you know, and it's like taking an old car out, and it doesn't make the trip back.
So to bring it back, yeah, he obviously not only held on, he released it on his birthday, knowing it would be his last birthday.
Yeah.
Knowing, you know, the reality of his situation. He knew it would be his last birthday.
Sure.
But then actually, you're right. I think he probably held on because he wanted to see the reviews.
Yeah. And how wonderful that it got to be a great album. Kind of like the way that I think George Carlin's special, last special was really good. And it's like, it's great that he got to go out on a good one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you've done so much good work. It's great that you could go out on a high note.
When I think you're too young to remember, but when John Lennon was shot, he was shot right before his last album was released.
I did not know that.
And I think there was at least one song on the album There might have been two that actually sounded for telling, but it couldn't have been because that was, you know, that was just...
He didn't schedule that one.
No, that was totally...
He was only halfway through Catching the Rye at that point. He didn't know.
But, yeah, David Bowie obviously knew. He obviously, you know, it was much like Warren Zevon's last album.
Yeah.
Knew that it would be his last release. And once it was released, once the good reviews came in, he goes, okay, I can go.
Yeah. So good for, but that happens a lot, you know, that or more often than you think, that last album or that last book. I'm trying to think, somebody else just had a good last. Oliver Sacks had some interesting last articles in The New Yorker. I mean, one of them was literally like about him doing certain things for the last time. Well, I guess this will be the last time I do that, you know, and it was a really interesting kind of meditation on it. You get a little second wind, I think, right at the end, maybe a little creative charge. I think, like I said, Carlin is a great example of somebody who really came back strong right before the end. Didn't you think? I thought his last couple specials were strong.
I stopped watching Carlin.
No, I got a little disinterested for a while there too, and I just
some
to
of it,
back
some
home.
Of it, some of it, I would watch and just go. He's just going easy now. He's just living on the reputation that is Carlin. He would make a statement that he would think this profound, and then he would end it with a dick joke.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, come on, George, you can. That's how I started doing, you know, that's how I started doing cultural, you know, speculation was say something relevant and then dick joke and then say something else relevant, dick joke. I mean, that's the easy, you know, and you're finishing your career with the same gimmick.
Yeah, you should listen to his last special or two. They're really strong. They're kind of about, they're dark.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
But I haven't heard the new Bowie album. I know my wife has it.
He released something a few months ago that people were raving about, and I listened to it, and it just wasn't, when this came out, it's like, you know, it's.
Well, David Bowie's a guy, and I do like him, a surprisingly good actor. He was great as a Tesla in the Prestige.
Yeah.
He was the best part of that movie. He was terrific. And he seemed like a great guy, but he's one of those guys that you're kind of supposed to like.
Well, I always
you're not really allowed
I always
to not
did,
like David
I,
Bowie.
I was a huge Bowie fan because I was, you know, I was rated, I was the center of his target demographic.
Sure.
When he skyrocketed,
right? But you know what I mean, right? He's a guy who's been cool pretty consistently the whole time.
Yeah,
like Bowie's never really had a time where it was uncool to like.
Well,
David Bowie.
I'll say this: David Bowie is one of the reasons I cut off my dreadlocks.
Really?
When I hit 40, yeah. Yeah, because at that point I said, you know, there's two ways that you can age. When I hit 40, I realized, you know, that I'm now officially middle-aged, and I said there's two ways you can go into middle age. You can go into it with the David Bowie model, where you accept that you're now middle-aged and move into it gracefully, or you can go with the Steven Tyler Mick Jagger model, where you completely deny it every time you pull on the mullet wig.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Or, you know, David Byrne is another guy who's just dapper, you know, now. He's like, he doesn't lose any cool points for it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So that's, I you know, I admire him for aging gracefully. And the one point I wanted to make is you might not realize this because you weren't there, but David Bowie, I think he... There's women that have done this, but not men, is that one person changed the entire fashion.
Sure.
It's Madonna did it a lot for women in the 80s, but in the 70s, David Bowie, without David Bowie, there would have been no platform shoes. There would have been no goth guys wearing eyeliner.
Like the femmy part of like the disco aesthetic types. Not that David Bowie's disco, but that kind of... Yeah, I know what you mean. That kind of
well, he was there. He was there before the disco. I mean, you know, it was disco. Disco kind of grew.
That's what I mean. Disco kind of encompassed that in a way where it kind of took on some of those feminine traits that he made.
Yeah, that he made acceptable. Yeah, there was absolutely before David Bowie, there was there was a definite line. He was the first person to ever blur the gender line, But
yeah.
but more so than that, even, you know, you can blur the gender line without platform shoes and
yeah, right.
And I think he probably was the first mullet. Who was David Bowie?
Probably interesting.
The original mullet.
But the least cool haircut in the world came from one of the most agreed upon coolest guys in the world, right?
I remember there were a couple guys that that shaved off their eyebrows.
Ooh, that's not a good look.
But they wanted to look like Ziggy Stardust.
Sure.
It was not a good look. And it took a while for those eyebrows to grow back.
Yeah.
They all lived to regret it.
They should sell those trimmers with a little sign that says, "Warning, you are not David Bowie."
Yeah, fortunately, none of them had the money to make their teeth crooked.
That would be the ultimate tribute, right? Give me English teeth.
So what I found about David Bowie, going back and listening to his early stuff, the music is incredible.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Space Oddity is great. A Man Who Sold the World is great.
The lyrics, on the other hand, are incredibly pedestrian.
Except for, I do think Ground Control to Major Tom, I think the lyrics in that are kind of fascinating and interesting, like a narrative.
Interesting.
But yeah, lyrically it's not a strong suit.
There's no depth.
But so many great songs don't have lyrical depth. You know, I mean, a lot of songs that you love, it's like
the music has such depth.
Absolutely. And I think that's like
it's kind of a contradiction.
Absolutely. You know, where it's like, or you get the lyrical depth of Bob Dylan with then like a real simple folky tune. Yeah. You know, but with Bowie, it's kind of the opposite. It's like but I think when the music has that depth, you don't even notice the lyrics because you're like, you're getting something out of it.
And when the show has depth, you don't notice that we're
out of time.
Actually, a minute over. See you next week.
This bonus minute dedicated to David Bowie.
TimSlegel.com.
Yeah, Brian Miller, comedy.com, Brian with a Y, and at Dean Miller Comedy. See you next time.
That time may change me.